Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
My name is Teresa Johnson. I am the niece of Jesse Luella Jackson. We are here today for an oral history recording. We are at the Midwest Genealogy Center, 3440 South Lee Summit Road. Today is December 2nd, 2017. Aunt Tootie, want to introduce yourself?
I'm Jesse L. Jackson, Luella, middle name, nickname Tootie, and I'm here for this history that they've been hounding me forever to do, and I'm a little reluctant, and I'm excited.
Awesome. So when and where were you born?
I was born in Kansas City, Missouri, 808 Euclid, in fact, 64124, I think it was at that time. At home.
Okay. So what was it like growing up?
Growing up was, you know, I've enjoyed everything in my life, and growing up was fun too, even though it was hectic. I had two little ones. I had a brother and a sister under me that I had to always watch. Wherever I went, grocery store, play, whatever, I had to take my younger sister and my younger brother. But I enjoyed it because I enjoyed my years.
Okay. So who were your parents?
My parents was Alberta Lenora Lennox. My father, Philip Lewis Chilcote.
So what were they like?
Mama was an excellent mother at home. When she was home, Mama was a beautiful woman, and she was a little wild. So she's perfect when she was at home. When she wasn't, I had to take over. That's why I say my childhood was kind of interesting. I always had to take care of my younger brothers and sisters. But Mama was an excellent cook. She could sew. She did everything. She very creative. She would paint. She woodwork. There was nothing that she would not try. And I think I got that from her. Very creative. And it's been passed down through the family.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned your nickname at the beginning. How did you get your nickname? And what is your nickname?
Tootie.
How did you get that name?
My oldest brother, Ronald, named everyone a sweet nickname. His name was Cakey. My next brother's name was Cookie. Then Candy. Then Tootsie, which turned into Tootie. Skip Nancy. And then we had Bubba.
Okay. So, do you have any siblings? And what were they like growing up?
Nancy Marie, that was my sister. She's 3 years younger than me. And then Louis Edward, he's 4 years younger than me. And they were challenging because Nancy and Bubba, that's why I'll refer to them, fought all the time. There was a year and one day difference in their age. And they fought all the time. And I had to be the, you know, mediator, separator, if Daddy didn't. If I laughed at something they did, I'd get a spanking too, but most of the time I didn't laugh at them. I remember one time, Bubba hit Nancy in the head with a brick, busted her head open, and she was bleeding profusely. Instead of her running home telling Mom and Dad, she went and got a bigger brick and hit him. And then it was a race to who could get home to Daddy first. And Daddy just picked them both up. They both got a whooping, and I was laughing, and he looked at me and said, "You next if you keep laughing," so I shut up.
So you mentioned you mentioned Lewis and Nancy. Did you have any other brothers and sisters?
Yeah, Candy. His name is Albert Lee Ballard. And my older brothers and sisters was Ronald, Levy, Ozra, which his nickname was Cookie, and then Betty Jean. The reason there, when you said siblings, I thought about the three that grew up with me. Mama had three sets of children. She had Ronald, Cookie, and Betty. Then she had Candy. Then she had me, Nancy, and Bubba. So she had three sets. So we kind of grew up three different ways, you know.
So can you tell me any of your favorite childhood stories? I know you just mentioned a couple, but can you just tell me any others that you may have?
My favorite childhood stories? Gosh, her own story. I don't know. I can't even think of anything. I did a lot of things. I remember my idea. She used to sew, and she made Nancy and I dresses out of potato sacks because they were very colorful. I mean, flower sacks. They come in real pretty print. So she would make our dress. Every dress we had was the same style, just different material. And I know one time we go to school, we look nice in these little dresses, but I just got tired of them because other kids had different clothes. And I told Mom, I said, can I have something beside these, these country dresses? They all look just alike, you know. And I never will forget that. And she said, well, make your own. And I started sewing. And since I didn't have a job where I could buy material, sometimes I would go in Mama's closet, and if I saw a fabric that I liked, skirt, blouse, or whatever, I'd cut it to my size, and I would get a spanking. But it was worth it because I had a new outfit.
Well, speaking of spankings, did you get in trouble? And what was the worst thing you did as a child?
That was the worst. I used to cut Mama's clothes up. That was the worst. And then one story, Mama used to wear a toupee. Hair. You probably don't know what a toupee is, but she had a good one and an old one. And I asked her, could I have her old one to put the hair on my dial? But I didn't know the difference between the new one and the old one. But Nancy did. So she said, Nancy will tell you which one is the old one. Well, Nancy didn't. She gave me the new one. And I cut this thing up and I pasted my dial, had nice hair and all that stuff. And I think Nancy met Mama at the bus stop. Because I got it.
That's an awesome story. What schools did you attend?
I attended W.W. Yates, grade school. And then I went to R.T. Coles Junior High. And I stayed there until they integrated the schools. And I was in the last year, I was in the ninth grade the last year that they closed R.T. Coles High School. And then I went to Manual High.
Okay. Have you ever been married?
Been married twice. I was married to my high school sweetheart, George W. Stewart. And we had one child, Rodney. And we lasted through college. And that was the end of that. I worked and everything. And I remarried Thomas E. Jackson, and we had one son, Philip Jackson. Mm-hmm. He had two by a previous marriage, and we were married like 48 years before he died, so we were together a long time.
Do you have any favorite stories from your, about your marriage?
I have a lot of stories about our marriage. We were married. We had... One good thing about my marriage that I remember, married to Thomas, he was the type of person that gave me the space I needed and supported me 100% in my development. Because I was young, I think we married, I was like 26, whatever, and really not knowing what I wanted to do. But when I decided that I wanted to go back to school to finish and start a career, he was always there, supportive, and I used to always refer to him as my soft place to land because he always let me do what I had to do to develop myself. And I never forgot that. I appreciated that, and I loved him dearly for that. And I didn't do it. I wasn't all perfect. I made mistakes, and he just patient enough to understand, and went on. He kind of reminded me like my dad because my dad was very philosophical. And he had a lot of philosophical sayings as was growing up, which I didn't understand half of them at the time. I thought he was crazy, really, sometime. And then as I got older and I got into situations, then I said, that's what Dad was talking about. And so he was a very knowledgeable person. And my husband reminded me very much of him.
Okay. You also mentioned your two children. What were their names?
Rodney Lewis is middle name after his grandpa, and Philip Anderson, his first name after my father, and Anderson was first name after his dad's father, so he had both grandpa's names.
Okay. Can you tell me something unique about each one of them?
Lord have mercy. Rodney was my first child, and I was young, ambitious, wild a little. And Rodney has those qualities. He's very spontaneous, impatient, but loving and caring. Now, he's a very caring person, but he's low on patience, I put it that way. So, and Philip, on the other hand, I was older when I had Philip. In fact, I was 34 years old. And he's very methodical in everything he does, thinks through everything. In fact, one big difference between the boys, I could wake up in the morning and spank Rodney because I know he was going to do something before the day was over. With Philip, I don't think one time his dad tried to spank him. He was like two, and his dad hit him with a newspaper, told him to stop doing something, and he stopped. And Jack moved back, and then he went right back and did it again. So Jack hit him with the newspaper, and he stopped. And then he went right back and did it again. And I was in the room watching him, and I was laughing. And I told him, you may as well give up. You've lost that battle. Philip was the type of child that spankings wasn't important. You had to talk to him and show him where what you wanted him to do was worthwhile. Then he would maybe do it.
Awesome. So do you have any just favorite stories about your kids together or some of the things that, you know?
Yeah, I do. I'm going to talk about Philip first because that's what's jumped in my mind. He was a special child because I think at the age of 10, he was sitting on we had a business also, radio and TV repair shop, which Rodney worked in as a child. He worked in, he drove the truck and everything, which was fine. But Philip was sitting on the curve talking to this officer one time, and there was construction going on. And he watched these guys buy these, you know, pop from this restaurant in the containers. And he sat there and he watched them, and he told his dad, he said, you know what? He said, I bet you if I go to the store and buy pop, I can sell them cold pop 50 cents a can. And he did. So he bought some can, and he put a sign in the window, soda pop, cold pop 50 cents. He made so much money that his dad took him to Leavenworth and they bought cases of pop. That was his first venture. And he saved his money. And when they had festivals down on 18th and Vine area, he had a candy stand that he sold to candy. Well, we were buying, think about the adults. And he said, well, Mama, he said, what about the kids? You know, they like candy and cookies and stuff. And that's how he started his business. And he's always been entrepreneurial-like. Then when the computers came in, we bought him computers because he was good at that. He started his own computer business where he would help the older people set up their computers and give them a quick lesson and whatnot, and he would save his money. So that's the type of child he was. Rodney now, on the other hand, was a hard worker. He would do whatever he wanted, but mostly creativeness came from Philip was more creative in making money.
Okay. So what are your dreams for your children?
My dreams, pretty much, Philip went to college. I wanted both of them to go to college because that's the way I raised them. But Rodney, I think in his 11th grade, halfway through, he asked me, he said, Mom, he said, what if I don't go to college? Will you still love me? You know, and like I told him, look, you've got to live with you longer than I have. If you don't want to go to college, you know, I'm sure you have your reasons. But Dad said, you either go to college, you go to Army, or you get a job. So that was it. So with Phil went to college, and he went into computers because he was real strong in that. And after I thought about it, now that I'm older, Rodney's 57, Phil's in his 43, it worked out fine because Rodney went to the service, and being the type of person he was, he needs those VA benefits. He doesn't have to worry. He's got his benefits. Phil, on the other hand, being an entrepreneurial type, will always make a way for himself. He will always negotiate something. So everything worked out just perfect without my help.
Okay. And Tootie, what did you do for a living?
I worked at the, I retired as a budget officer from the United States Postal Service. I was one of the first women in finance and the first black to be promoted to supervisor. And that was a challenge because I think when I was hired at the post office, they hired six women. They were looking for women to go in parcel posts, and they hired six women, three white, three black, three military history, and three not. And to see if we would last in parcel posts. And then they would hire women in parcel posts and then on. Well, we went in parcel posts. I think everybody made it in parcel posts but me. I was first one sent out of parcel posts, I guess because I don't know why. But anyway, I was sent out of parcel posts and I was sent on the floor to work part, you know, regular mail. And I didn't like that. So I could type and everything. And so I bid into a typing pool so I could work typing and then have weekends off Monday through Friday. That was fine. And one day I went in on a day I wasn't supposed to be in. It was a holiday. And they said I couldn't work, and I argued. I've always been argumentative. I argued that I wanted to stay, so they said stay because they need me. I worked that day, and just so happened the director of finance was working. And he needed someone that could type up a draft for him. Right place at the right time. So I went up there and I did that for him. And his writing was so bad, but I made out what he was saying. And then I put in, filled in what I thought he was trying to say. But anyway, he was impressed with that and told me to come back Monday morning into his office. And that's how I got into finance. I never left from then on.
That's a wonderful story. You also mentioned earlier when you talked about being married to, I'll call him Uncle Dickie.
Uncle Dickie, yes.
Uncle Jack, that you all owned a television shop. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to, if you could elaborate on that a little bit as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, we owned a radio and TV shop because Uncle Jack was, in military, and he did a lot of electronics on the side. And he was working for Anderson, who had the TV shop. And when he died, Jack bought the shop from him. In other words, he bought the whole building at 18th and Vine. We had a lot of property from the Gym Theater, and it's still there, all the way to Highland, which was like three storefronts and like nine apartments upstairs, which never, finished those. But we built that, and we worked there until TV started fading out and we wasn't making much money. And so the first storefront, I said, well, let's try something different. We converted it into a meeting hall, went in there and cleaned up, made it up. Because at that time I was in a lot of organizations and we never could find a place to have a meeting in our area. So we remodeled it and everything and made a meeting hall out of that. They had a kitchen and a restroom and everything that we could rent out to other people. And we named it Phil's Den. Being was named after Philip because he was the little entrepreneur. It was part of his idea. And lions have dens since he's a Leo. That's how it got its name, Phil's Den. And that business made enough money, we rented out enough parties and meetings that supported the whole building. And so we did that until they redeveloped 18th and Vine, and then they bought us out.
Yeah, I remember very distinctly spending a lot of days at Phil's Den as well as your shop. What was the
that
name
was
of
our
your...
biggest that was our biggest fight with the city too.
Yes.
Because we had this big building right there in the historical 18th and Vine area, and they didn't want to give us any money for our building and our lot and all that stuff. And so we had to get a lawyer, and we fought the city. We fought them. And not that we fought progress, but we wanted to get our money for what it was worth. And we won our case.
Absolutely. And yeah. Antutti, what was the name of the TV shop?
I just 18th Street Electronics, I think.
Awesome. I spent a lot of time there as a kid.
And we did that, and, being married, just amongst us in there, we showed us the kind of marriage we were so that I could be familiar with what Uncle Jack would come home and talk about when he talked about resistors. And so I went back to school. I went to Central Technical Institute and took up electronics. So that when he come home, rather than him going somewhere else talking about his job, he come home talking to me about it.
Exactly. I also, just because I'm your niece, I also know that you were in a lot of organizations. Can you tell me about a couple of those, or at least the names of them? I just remember you being in every organization.
Yeah, that's me. Okay, from school on down. But the most memorable, I was in ABWA, and I was one of the charter members in Cosmic Stars. We started our own chapter because at that time, there weren't any black chapters. Mm-hmm. We were just in the chapter.
And ABWA stands for?
American Business Women's Association. Of course, the men used to say American Broads Action or something derogatory. But anyway, that's what it stood for. So we decided we would go to all the conventions and everything, and we collected our money and raised money and everything. We had a very successful chapter. But then we decided that, you know, we needed more black representation. And so we got together with a group from St. Louis, and every time we have a meeting, we would have our side meeting deciding how we were going to do this. And St. Louis went first with the first chapter, and then we went first chapter in Kansas City. And so that's how we started Cosmic Stars. And the old chapter, which is Trailblazers, has to set up the officers for the, you know, new chapter. And it was all black chapter, and they gave us a white president. I mean, those were the sign of the times, you know. But we didn't argue. We accepted her, and she worked with us, and a couple of others came with us. But she knew what was going on, and she really wasn't comfortable, so she left. And we took over our chapter. And we reached Star Wars, you know, we made scholarships, and we did a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And that was an educational, because that was during the period where women were just coming out the house into the workforce. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of seminars. Kay Waldo was one of them. She used to come and teach us about women's rights, you know, and how to develop yourself. We learned how to finances, we learned how to entrepreneurships and professionalism. We just learned a whole lot of things. And then we also learned that up is not the only way. You know, everyone wants you to go up, but up, sometimes you go sideways, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes be good at what you're doing where you are and plant your seed instead of go. Everybody don't want to go up to the top.
So, absolutely.
And then that one, that was ABWA. And then another organization I was really proud of was the Phoenix Association. And that came out of the Postal Service. We had the same thing. Blacks weren't getting promoted. And so we just decided, maybe this ain't right. So we got together and said, maybe if we, you know, we all took the test and everything. I think I made 32 on the test. I said, I know I'm smarter than that. I can write my name and get 32, you know. So anyway, we sent off for books and everything. We had this little group. We studied at home on this test, and we all passed. That's six of us. We all passed that test. And we found out, well, this is all right. So we started helping others pass the test. Then we formed this organization called the Phoenix Association, which was when we all had the initial meeting, found out that we had someone that was black or female in every area of the Postal Service there was. And when we decided, that's when we organized, and we decided not as a combative group, but what we did, we start training those that wanted to be supervisors, you know, how to pass your test, mm-hmm. how to interview, the information you need to get into that field, and things like that. And that one I was really proud of, too.
Yeah, that was awesome. And I'm assuming most of this was in the 1970s.
Oh, yeah. 60s, it was
1960s,
late 60s,
70s. Okay.
70s, yeah.
Yeah, that was certainly a sign mm-hmm. of the times. Okay. Can you tell me about your religious beliefs, spiritual beliefs, you know?
Yeah, I believe in God. I've been in church all my life. Started with St. Joseph Catholic Church. I didn't belong. I just went. And when I got married, we went to with Thomas, because I stayed out of church for a long time. We were just doing good. We were doing really good. Financially, physically, socially, we were just doing great. And we just decided it was time to give thanks to God and to give something back. And we joined the Lutheran Church by invitation of Chuck Moore. He used to be on Channel 5. Mm-hmm. He's the only person we ever knew to invite us to church. That's when it stopped me thinking. People invite you to everything, but they don't invite you to church. So he invited us to church, and we went to church with him, and we went through the lessons and everything, and we became very active in the church. We held office in just everything that was in church. I was very active. In fact, everything I've been in, I always get very active in it, or else I get out of it. So I stayed there until St. John Lutheran Church. Mm-hmm. It resolved because lack of membership. Membership got old, and then I went to St. Mark Church, which was Catholic. It was it was the United Church. It had four different denominations. And I think the UCC and Presbytery were the only two that was remaining there when I got there, under the direction of Reverend Sam Mann. And I went there and worked for them. And they had a UCC, they had a 501c3 organization, St. Mark Daycare and the United Inner City Services, which helped people feed the people and did a lot of things in the community. So I went to work for them as a bookkeeper. And I worked there for a while, and then I became Reverend Mann's executive assistant, and I stayed his assistant until 2008. And then the church did everything, every function, officer, whatever you needed, I did it. I just love the church.
Yes.
And now I belong to St. Paul Presbyterian Church.
Okay.
I refuse to do anything. I go to church and I enjoy the service. I do my Bible studies and stuff like that, but I'm just tired. Because I still do in the morning I wake up, I do my Bible study, I write my journal, and I do my prayers, my motivations, and every morning I do that, and that starts my day.
Yes. And you also quote text on Facebook.
Yes, I do.
Give a spiritual awakening every day.
And I give a lot of advice to a lot of young ladies. I have to say that because a lot of them come back and say, I have talked to a lot of them that I've even forgotten. And they'll come back and say, I remember when you did so. It's important to me to live your life in such a way that you do leave your mark here and there and everywhere, you know. And it makes me feel good.
On your family heritage, Aunt Tootie, what traditions have been passed down in our family that you can recall, or that one or two that just stand out to you?
The most important tradition in our family, and I still see it in the youngest one, we treat everyone equal and with respect. I don't care who they are, what staff and status in life they are, it's important to treat everyone with respect. I had to tell you this quick story. I remember I took Rodney, we went to a restaurant down 18th and Harris. I think it was a busy bee at that time, to get some chili. And we were standing in line for our chili, and this man came in. He was really dirty. I mean, he might smell too, but he was really, really bad. And Rodney said, "Ooh, Mama, look at that man, how dirty he is." And that was a teachable moment, because I told him, I said, you know, that man is dirty because he probably is a hardworking man. He's probably just off of work coming to get something to eat. Mm-hmm. And Rodney looked at him, and that was it. You know, he never judged him or anything. So I think that's important, to teach our kids not to judge one another, because you never know who you're talking to or who you are.
And I would concur with that family tradition. Now that we have two, I'm adding my own in here, is that we always kiss each other when we see each other and hug. Right. We have to hug and kiss and treat people with respect. So I would agree with that. Tell me about just yourself, your favorite pastimes, your favorite food, music, drink, sing. You know, just what makes you Aunt Tootie, Jesse Jackson, who you are right now.
Well, one thing I think is my smile. I've been written up several times at post office. They wrote me up the woman of the year. I was woman of the year in ABWA, honored in Minneapolis and whatnot with champagne and crepes. I never forget that. But I've been written up at the post office in books for being my success story. So they just call it a success story. I just try to do the best I can with what I have at the time. And I try to be the kind of person that people will respect. I've never worried about anybody liking me, you know, and I don't particularly care about gossip. I listen to people. I know I talk a lot, but I listen. And I try to treat people with respect, and I help and encourage people a lot. I like to encourage people, especially because some people, you never know where they are in life. You know, just a kind word or a hug or a suggestion sometimes can bring people out of the darkest spot in their life, and I like to do that. Because sometimes you can see the light bulb go off, you know. And I like it when people call me and say, oh, Jesse, what about so-and-so, so-and-so? And then I try to be an encourager and everything. And that's just the type of person I am. I'm very active. I get involved in everything. I can't help that. But I remember at church one time, this lady asked me, she said, Jesse, she said, how do you walk through all the, how you work through all these cliques in church? And I told her, I said, I hadn't even noticed. All I do is look at the people for what they are and do what they're doing. And yes, I do love to shop. I love shopping. I love to shop. And you tell me my closet. If I see something I like, I usually buy it in every color. And it's probably every size in my closet now. But anyway, I do love to shop. But now I have to say this. I don't pay regular price for anything. I shop at the top stores. And when they have their sales and my coupons and all that, I use all of it because it's kind of like a game. If something is $150 and I can get it for $10, I just love it. You know. And then I love the casino. I love to go to the casino. And my husband, it's his fault too, because I never gambled before, but he used to say, let's go. He would take me to the casino and everything, and then I just got hooked. I just love it. Of course, I play pennies and I don't play much, but I like to go. I like the noise, I like the people, and I like the food.
And I would concur with that statement as your niece. That's awesome. What was your happiest moment of your life and also the saddest?
The happiest moment of my life is having my babies. I'm sorry, but I was, pregnant. I was so happy when I was pregnant. It was just, I think really that was the happiest time of my life, the first one and the second one. Because they told me after I had Rodney, I would probably not have any more kids. I wasn't, something was wrong with my uterus or something, and I could not have any more children. So I was very happy and blessed when I carried my kids. And then when I ended up getting pregnant with Philip, I was really happy because I thought I had a tumor. I went to the doctor, and I told him, I said, I got a tumor. Something's wrong with my stomach or whatnot. And when he examined me and he said, yeah, you've got a tumor and you get rid of it in 9 months. Then I said, you're kidding. And I was so happy. And I was happy, and then I was upset too, because Mama always said, you're not through having kids. You're going to have another child. And I said, Mama, no. I said, doctor done said no. She said, doctors don't know everything. So she was happier than I was when I got pregnant.
What was the saddest moment of your life?
The first saddest, I should say, when my dad died. Because I thought my life was over when dad died. I mean, I really thought life was ended. Because my dad was my friend. Anytime I had a problem or anything, I would go talk to him, and he could always talk me back into reality. And when he died, I just thought everything was over. When I went to his funeral, and after the funeral, people talk and they smile and they laugh. And everybody that laughed, I got mad. I wanted to hit everybody that laughed because I said, why are they laughing? My dad is dead, And I was in my 20s, but I still remember when everyone left the funeral parlor. His body was in there, and the room was kind of dim, They was closing the lights out. And I looked in there, and I'm scared of dead people. Let me tell you that right off the bat, scared of dead people. But I walked in there with my dad, and I looked at him, scared of death. And I put my hand on his cheek, and every bit of fear in my body just went out. And I told him I loved him. And from then on, I was sad when my brothers died. My mom, I was sad when she died. But I think the saddest was when my dad died. Mm-hmm. When my brother, the one closest to me, when Candy died, I was really sad. More so, I was angry than mad and sad with him because he smoked and I knew he wasn't supposed to. And he was just so hard-headed, that's all. And on top of that, he died 3 days after my birthday, and I think he did that on purpose.
That sibling
rivalry. So I said, still he did that on purpose, so I won't forget when he died, But yeah. I loved him, too. Yeah, he was the closest. We were the closest, so I loved him.
Who has been the biggest influence on your life?
My dad and my stepfather. Okay. And I'll tell you why. My dad was my biggest influence on me at the beginning of my life, teaching me the type of person I needed to be, my character, responsibility, and you know, just my overall way of living a decent life and respecting and other people and loving folks and loving God. My stepfather, because when he came along, I was working, and he taught me how to handle my money. He said, always be able to see your money. Because I was working and spending. I think I was shopping more than I was money I'd get. I'd shop and spend and whatever. But he said, be able to look at your money. You know, you working hard 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. Be able to look at your money. And so he taught me how to, then I started taking savings bonds and I started investing. So the first part of my life was built on my character, and the second part was financial and my stability, I should say, in life.
And those were wonderful lessons. What are some of the most important lessons that you've just learned in your overall life?
To be positive. Mm-hmm. There's always tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I tell everyone, this too will pass. Mm-hmm. Put it in God's hands and move on. Especially if there's nothing you can do about it. You know, I love the serenity prayer. You know, I'd say that. And let go, let God, for number one. That's really number one, because it's so much stuff going on that you just cannot deal with everything. You have to find, and you have to find something positive in everything. Mm-hmm. Something positive in everything, something positive in everyone. If nothing else, but they're a child of God.
Mm-hmm. And Titi, how would you like to be remembered?
By my smile. I'm always laughing, talking, and I have a weird sense of humor. That's how I want to remember. And caring. Because I was thinking about this genealogy, and I got to thinking, I've been caring for people all my life. I remember when I was very small, there was an old woman who used to live next door to us. I used to go sit with her because she was bedridden. I'd just sit with her. I ain't do anything. And whatever she wanted, I'd do that. Then when different ones in the family get sick, I was always the one that had to take care of them. And I did that. And I on through life, my brothers and sisters, my mother. I took care of my mother for 8 years in my home. And because she, you know, when we finally took her out of her house, we had to get her in there. And I never lost my positive feeling, or it never was a burden on me, because when I took care of Mom, I learned about my mother things that no one else would ever know. You know, we talked, and she told me things that probably she never even mentioned before. Took care of her, and then my brother was sick. He was in a nursing home, helped take care of him with the rest of the family. Then my husband got Alzheimer's. I took care of him 10 years, known Alzheimer's. He probably was sick before that without realizing it. And I took care of him. And I only put him in a home 3 months when I had my breast scare, because I couldn't lift anyone. Otherwise, I brought him home, put a hospital bed in our bedroom, and I took care of him day and night until he died in 2010. And I never felt why me? I didn't feel like that. I felt like I was honored. And I remember when he died, and I called the pastor, and he came in, and we held hands, and I prayed. And I thank God for the 48 years that I had him in my life and the opportunity to take care of him. And the same with Mom, because it helped me more than it helped them.
Absolutely. Well, Auntie, this has certainly been a pleasure. Again, I am the niece, Teresa Connor Johnson, of my aunt, Jesse, Aunt Tootie Jackson. I'm very honored to be here and to have interviewed you. And I'll let you just summarize, just for the record, who you are and who you're and how you got here and how I got here. So if you could do that.
I am Jesse Luella Ballard Stewart Jackson, nicknamed Tootie. I was born June the 24th, 1940. I am the paternal great-granddaughter of Felix Chilcote, 1852 to 1884, and Alice Oliver, 1848 through 1924. the paternal great-granddaughter of George Ware, 1833 to 1879, and Laura Barker, 1838-1923, and paternal granddaughter of Louis Chilcote, 1877. Paternal granddaughter of Louis Chilcote, 1877 through 1940, and Nancy Ware, 1869 to 1936. Maternal great-granddaughter of Louis Lennox, 1865. Great maternal great-granddaughter of Joshua Chestine, 1860, and Julia Pittman, 1873. Maternal great-granddaughter of Albert Lennox, 1885-1915, and Lenora Chestine, 1892-1954. Daughter of Philip Chilcote, 1912-1962, and Alberta Lenora Lennox, Levy Ballard Chilcote Farnsworth, 1910-2000.